Well, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Sir Mark. It was very good of you to, very sporting of you, if I may say so, to agree to this, even though I suspect it wasn't what you had in mind. Don't worry, I know all about newspaper headline writers. Now, may I just say that neither I nor anyone I've ever met denies the existence of climate change. I suppose my point would be that the climate has been changing constantly for the 4.5 billion years or so that the Earth has been in existence, and it will continue to change, and nobody I know has ever denied that. Nobody I know has ever denied the fact that CO2 is one of the gases that creates the warming around the Earth. It's not the most important one, that's water vapour, but CO2 is certainly one of them. And nobody denies the fact that man has been putting CO2 into the atmosphere ever since the start of the Industrial Revolution. So it follows, therefore, quite logically, that man has had some sort of impact on the climate. We've put carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and therefore we must have had some effect on the atmosphere. It does not follow that man is responsible for all or even most of the relatively small amount of warming that has taken place over the last 250 years, warming of which I've seen described in official documents at times of 0.8 degrees and 0.6 degrees. And in fact, all of the evidence suggests that man can't have been responsible for all of that warming because all sorts of other factors are affecting the Earth's climate. If we go back to my first point about climate change, we know that there have been times when the Earth has been covered in ice and other times when there's been no ice at all. We are still technically in an ice age at the moment, albeit luckily, fortunately for us, we are in an interglacial. We know, I mean, I'm here with scientists that that basically the ice ages have been, we've been getting 100,000 years or so of ice and then 10,000 years or so of an interglacial, and we're coming to the end, perhaps, of an interglacial at the moment. So the next thing that we may need to worry about is actually a lot of cooling going on in the atmosphere. But we know that even within these cycles, even within the interglacials, there have been cycles of warmth and coolness going on over thousands of years, long before man started to have any impact at all on the environment. We know that the Roman period was warmer, which was then followed by a cooler period in the Dark Ages. There was then the medieval warming period, and then a little ice age, where even the Thames used to freeze over. And coincidentally, that came to an end at round about the same time that we started to industrialise. So one of the first questions that I always ask of anyone who talks to me about global warming is how much of the 0.8 degree rise that we've seen over the last 200 years or so, how much of that is due to the fact that the Earth was naturally warming up anyway because we were coming out of a particularly cool period? I've never had an answer. I'm always thought, well, the scientists say this and they say that, so you must be wrong. Well, I'm in a room full of scientists today, so that's my first question, and I've got some more. Because the next point is that if CO2 is solely responsible for the warming that's taken place, then obviously one would expect to see a clear correlation between CO2 increases and temperature increases. But that is not what's happened at all. We've seen in the first part of the 20th century, we saw modest amounts of CO2 going into the atmosphere, and quite a sharp increase in temperature. Then from 1940 to 1970, as industrialisation started taking place over the world, we saw big falls in temperature, which led people actually to think, including people I suspect who would have sat in this room, that we were embarking on a new ice age. Then from 1970 to about 1997, big increases in CO2 and a similar increase in temperature to the one we'd seen in the first part of the 20th century. And then, most surprisingly of all, and perhaps to the irritation of all those who believe in the consensus, no warming whatsoever since 1997. The temperature has not increased at all, despite all of the industrialisation that's going on. Now, obviously, one doesn't need to be a scientist to realise that clearly other factors are having an effect on the environment. And we don't entirely know what they all are. I mean, people talk about volcanoes, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, the Atlantic currents, one of any number of factors, but those factors are having an effect on the climate. That much is certain. And so before we can start to work out what the possible costs and benefits are of climate change policies, or whether in fact we can make it, before we can even make predictions about increases of 2 degrees or more by the end of the next century, we have to know exactly how much of the increase that's already taken place is due to CO2 and how much is due to other factors. And as nobody knows what exactly and fully understands what the other factors are, nobody can say for certain how much of the rise that we've seen is man-made and how much is not. And therefore, nobody and no model can make a prediction about what's going to happen by the year 2100. I hear people saying, well, there's a precautionary principle. You know, you accept that something's going wrong, so we have to take precautions. Well, we can take precautions about all sorts of things. I happen to think the biggest threat likely to face us over the next few years is a complete financial meltdown of a sort that would dwarf what happened in 2007. I really believe that's a possibility. But people are angry about even the prospect of small cuts in public spending to resolve that. I think there is always the possibility of some kind of new illness, disease, taking hold of the population in a world where we can travel across borders very, very quickly. And I don't see much being done about that. There's a bigger chance of a meteor strike than most people realise, as many people in this room will appreciate. So there's a great deal that we could be spending our money on if we want to take precautions. In fact, perhaps one of the most obvious ones would be to protect ourselves against the rapid cooling in temperatures, which could happen if a new ice age strikes, and one is overdue. So Mark has talked about an insurance policy, you know, but in reality, what would be going on here is we'd be paying a premium, but nobody else would be paying it. Because our policy at the moment to mitigate climate change has been to bring in all kinds of taxes onto industries, manufacturing industries, onto homeowners, in the hope that they will reduce their energy. But of course, all that's happened in the case of businesses is they've taken their industries elsewhere. They're quite happy to move over to China or to other countries where they will emit equal amounts of carbon dioxide as they were previously, but without anyone benefiting from the jobs in this country. So I think it's that's a pretty ludicrous response. My colleague Peter Liddy, who is an economist, is going to talk more about the economics. But Sir Mark mentioned this 2-degree rise predicted by the IPCC at the end of this century. That is predicated on the idea that the developing world will develop, which of course is a good thing and is happening at the moment. And as they develop, they will be emitting more and more carbon dioxide, which is again quite plausible. But of course, what the IPCC and the scientists don't seem to understand is that those countries will be getting much, much richer as they develop. Their standards of living will be catching up with the United Kingdom. So we're going to be living in a much, much richer world, a world where hopefully we're not going to see starvation anywhere in the world, and we're going to see affluent people right the way across the world. So we may see a small increase in temperature, but we're going to see a huge increase in wealth, and with that will come the ability to deal with any of the problems that are caused. I don't want to take up too much time, but in dealing with the response, I know there are some environmental organisations here, and I believe in looking people in the eye and saying to people what I feel, as you're probably gathering by now. And I'm absolutely incensed by the attitude of some of the environmental movements, particularly, I have to name them, Friends of the Earth in particular, and Oxfam, which now stars itself as an environmental and climate change group first and foremost. Because these organisations will make a case for subsidy of renewables in order to combat climate change. But at the same time, all of them are rightly highlighting fuel poverty and demanding the government does more to cut our fuel bills. Well, you know, we can have one or the other, but we can't have both. And we have nuclear power as an option if we want to generate large amounts of power without CO2. But the Greens, you know, Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, they're all totally opposed to nuclear power. We could frack for gas. It would still create carbon dioxide, but about half as much as coal. But again, the environmentalists are already totally opposed to it. They're also opposed to gas coming in as LNG through Wales, and we're opposed to the pipelines there. They're opposed to a 7 barrage. Its 7 barrage could generate, I believe, 5% of the UK's electricity without any carbon dioxide emissions, and yet the environmental groups are against it because they say it would inconvenience some wader birds. I mean, this is absolutely ludicrous. And as a politician, you know, it is impossible to go out there and sell policies such as support for renewables if even the people who are calling for them are not prepared to accept the consequences and making the case for what's going to happen next, which is obviously going to be an increase in energy prices for consumers and for businesses. I believe that what we need is a grown-up debate. I think we need all sides of the argument to be put. Sir Mark talked about sea level rises over the last 100 years, but with all due respect, Sir Mark, what were the sea level rises in all the hundreds of years prior to this, because sea levels have been rising intermittently ever since the end of the last ice age. So, Mark, you didn't mention it today, but I've been doing my research, sir, and you've been quite rightly, I think, calling for scientists to be absolutely open about where they get their information from and how they make their calculations. And I wonder, sir, what you make of the Climate Research Unit, the University of East Anglia, trying to prevent people from getting hold of mathematic algorithms that have been used to calculate the future, used to make the future predictions about what temperature is going to be, about Michael Mann and his hockey stick, who used intellectual property rights to prevent people from seeing how he made his calculations. I believe you mentioned cold deaths. You mentioned the deaths that have been brought forward because of heating. But you didn't, sir, with all due respect, mention the far greater number of people who die as a result of cold across Europe every year. If we as politicians are to make rational decisions, then we first of all need all those people involved in campaigning to be open about the science and completely open about what they can know and what they actually don't know. And we need organisations that are demanding certain policy responses to be willing to go out and sell them themselves. At the moment, I'm afraid what I see is not so much science as politics and quite a lot of propaganda. And at this moment in time, I remain highly sceptical about the whole notion of climate change and anthropological global warming. And I very much regret the fact that I voted for the Climate Change Act in 2008. And I'm very proud to be standing here alongside Peter Lilly, who was one of the few MPs, in my opinion, who was far-sighted enough to see what was happening and to vote against it. My last question for the scientists is, can anyone explain to me why there's been no increase in temperature since 1997, despite all of the predictions that have been made? Thank you very much.